Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Brew University Virtual Roundtable. I'm your host, Jeff Weaver, Training Director for J.J. Taylor Companies, and I am excited to be here with you once again. So get comfortable, grab a tasty beverage, and sit back and relax. You're with us for the next hour here at the Roundtable. And I'm very excited because today we have a special guest joining us at the Roundtable, and it's always fun when we can have a special guest with us. So my guest today is a nationally recognized leader in the retail sales and category management for the beverage industry. Formerly a vice president of national accounts, he's got extensive experience working with major domestic suppliers, importers, wholesalers, retailers of all stripes. Back in 2012, he started his new profits selling system, which focused on an empathic approach to selling, not just on chasing the program du jour, but really focusing on the needs of our customers, getting to a better discovery and creating long-term relationships that make money and make customers happy. In the same way that we want to be trusted beer advisors, the profit system aligns so perfectly, and that's why he's been such a great partner. In fact, we partnered with Tom back in 2019 to start working on a sales booster shot system we'll be talking about today that perfectly aligns with our own six-pack service standards. So we're really excited to have him on the show with us, my guest, Tom Fox with Fox Sales Consulting. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jeff. It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time. And I know it's been a weird year, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that even more here in a minute. we're glad you were able to take some time out and join us here virtually at the Virtual Roundtable. So thanks for coming.
No, it's great. And it's a delight to be here. Like I say, the J.J. Taylor team is a nationally recognized team, and the chance to connect with the team is a thrill. So I do appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Well, it definitely, we've got the right people around here, and that's what makes all the difference. But with that, let's talk a little bit about what our people can be doing, because it is coming into the holiday season. And today's topic, of course, focused around sales, focused around making sure that our teams are selling the right way, selling what we would call the first choice way and what you guys call the profits way. That's the topic for sure. But of course, the elephant in the room, the thing that has sort of defined 2020, perhaps more than anything else, is this COVID-19 pandemic that we're dealing with. So my first question for you, Tom, really is let's talk a little bit about the sales environment and coping with COVID. What has this done for our retailers' expectations of us? How is that changing in this environment?
No, first of all, it's a great question. And I can think of no sooner way than to lose the first choice designation than to not handle this properly. The customers, you know, the society in general, but of course our customers as well. I mean, the disruption that they have gone through, given COVID, is so significant. And I think the idea that a lot of salespeople, sensitivity may not necessarily be a core strength. You know, when you think about someone who sells, they have an outgoing personality, maybe someone who's strongly opinionated. The realities of COVID, though, and thinking of what disruptions have happened to people, I mean, think about it. It's really daunting, but not only from a professional sense, but from a political sense, a social sense, a financial sense. You know, there's just a need to acknowledge more, listen more, and I think have a really less opinion. This is not the time to be the interesting guy about your political opinions or an interesting guy about, you know, social unrest. This is the time to be much more sensitive. And we talk a lot, you mentioned empathy. It's really the fuel for what we consider to be the sales process. So, you know, just trying to connect with people because of those sensitivities that people are under across most facets of their life, I think is really job number one. So the good news is, as we're heading into the holidays, you know, we have a couple things that we want to talk about, but the idea behind the holidays and how big of an opportunity that is for the customer, you know, you think every month of the year is about 8% of the year. So they're gonna on average bring about 8% of their business by month. It doesn't quite double during the holidays, but it's about almost 50% index. So they really have a wonderful opportunity to help the customer. And I think that really is really, really what it comes down to. The idea of being first choice or being a trusted advisor, during COVID or almost more so than ever, I just want people to be thinking about how can I help the customer? And I don't know what your opinion is, but I don't know how many salespeople look at their job as one that we want to help the customer, make progress. And I don't know what your opinion is on that, but I don't know that most, when I ask people, can you help your customer? Jeff, you'd be shocked at the looks I get. I would love for someone to jump on the table and raise their arms up in the air and go, heck yes, I can help. But that's not usually what happens. What happens when we ask that question is that they'll kind of look at me funny and they'll go, but I wish there was a bigger connection with the idea more than ever now to help. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I think you're exactly right. I think that's what differentiates distributors like ours and ones who are partnered with you and are using your system from others who are really, like we say, focused on the program du jour. They're focused on their numbers. They're focused on hitting their MBOs. They're focused on hitting their goals. And those have to be done, but they should be in service of the relationship and not at the expense of the relationship. And we see it all the time across the aisle and in other distributorships and in other, other houses, as we say, that it's, you know, my first job is to the brands that I represent, and whatever I have to do to take care of those brands, I'm going to take care of them. And the customer is a means to that end. But the reality of what we do, the reality of the position we're in the middle tier, is we serve both sides of the equation. We have just as much a responsibility to our retailers as we do to our suppliers. So when it comes to my suppliers, yeah, of course, I want to make sure they get the best placements, the right places to be, the highest profitability, the best pull through, all the things that they want need to be addressed. But I have an equal obligation to my retailer to put the right beer in the right account for their customers, for their consumers. And if I don't recognize that, if I don't take the time to think about, am I making sure I serve both clients here, then I'm missing a huge piece of the pie. Because at the end of the day, where's the money really come from? The money really comes from our retail partners. You know, I feel like it is the one thing that tends to get missed in this industry, because we think a lot about suppliers. We tend to think a lot more than maybe we should about consumers, because we don't have a direct relationship with them. But at the end of the day, we're a B2B. We work between us and the retailer, and that's who signs our check, is the retailer that cuts me money and delivers and takes possession and hands me a cash or check or EFT or whatever it is. That's my actual revenue stream. If I'm not serving that well first, then those other relationships are going to suffer by virtue of I don't have a place to put their stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the, you know, what would be the culture of J.J. Taylor, if you think about the two words, the two phrases you mentioned, the vision of first choice and the mission of trusted advisor. Trusted beer advisor or trusted advisor?
Trusted beer advisor. That's how we want to define the relationship.
Trusted beer advisor. So I'm certain that represents what leaders of the company want the culture to look like. And to a large degree, it probably does. But there is probably no better time to double down on that mindset and behavior that is, you know, first choice and the idea of trusted beer advisor, because you want to know how to get through COVID. That direction is the key. And no one's ever going to be too good at it. I mean, that's the beauty of a well-constructed vision and mission. You'll never be too good at it. So if you're good, it's great. It's great. But you'll never be too good. And the customer needs that now more than ever. And I think so. I think much of what, and that's one of the great things, Jeff, as you and I have worked together in the last 12, 18 months, is I've gotten, you know, I've always been very familiar with J.J. Taylor. And, you know, the reputation you not only have regionally, but you have nationally is very impressive. But there's a lot of great companies that don't have, or if they have that direction, they have that guidance, it isn't necessarily cultural. It's on a wall, it's in a handbook, and it's great to construct those things, but it's an awfully high bar to think that you could execute that. So, and I'm sure the leaders of the company, with probably every ounce of humility that you would want them to have, it's like, yeah, we're good, but we've got to get better following that direction. And I think during COVID, there's no better opportunity now than to really double down on that approach, because the customer needs that now more than ever. They really do.
I love what you said about it, Tom, because we can't have enough of it. You're absolutely right. There is no ceiling on being a trusted beer advisor. There really is no ceiling on being first choice. It's not something that we can be too good at. What a great perspective on that to keep in mind going into this season, that no matter how good we're doing, no matter how well you think you've got that relationship dialed in, there's no limit to how much better it can be if you just continue to focus on the right stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, trust takes a while to build. And it takes no time at all to lose. And I mean, listen, Jeff, I'm not sure if you've been privy to friends or just situations with COVID and with all the pressures and with the election. My office, this guy next door to me in my office, he's not here, so he can't hear me right now. He is going through a divorce because he and his wife are not on the same page ideologically and politically. And that's almost impossible to imagine. You know, one of my business partners who you know, is a great guy. We could not be at more opposite ends. And after every conversation, we'll do the air hug because his political affiliation is not a condition of our friendship and love for each other. It doesn't exist. And I probably had three of my kids, two out of my three kids didn't vote the way it's not a condition. It's not a condition.
No, and such a good point, because it is, you know, we've seen this year with civil unrest and politics have been more charged in our culture than ever before. But it is something that I'm constantly talking about, and having a background in political science, I have a lot of affinity for that topic. But at the end of the day, it's one aspect of life. And we as a business, we can't survive if we can only sell to the businesses that are politically aligned with us or that are socially aligned with us. You know, I always remember, I think it was Michael Jordan used to get asked a lot about his political leanings, and he would never speak in publicly. And finally, one time someone asked him about why he never speaks publicly, and he said, well, Democrats and Republicans both buy shoes. Right. You know, I mean,
I love that.
There's no limit to that. Why would I alienate half my fan base because they all watch basketball and they all want to buy tennis shoes? And it's the same in beer. And, you know, we have our opinions and certainly we're entitled to them. But when it comes to our customers and when it comes to the, you know, selling environment, it doesn't matter who you voted for. If you want beer, you want beer, and we're going to sell it to you. So we do want to make sure that, again, with everything else going on this year, these are topics that really the best way we can deal with them is by sidelining them and focusing on the relationship and the beer and the transaction at hand.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost like some people feel like in a conversation, they're obligated to provide an opinion. And I'd look at it the exact opposite. You're obligated not to in a COVID era, especially around COVID. I mean, how does any of us know what someone has gone through with their family or with a friend? I mean, it's touched everyone. And I know people have very polarizing opinions, very differing opinions on, you know, just, hey, look at, you know, most of the folks who are really vulnerable, you know, but then, you know, listen, there's the high school student who was just clobbered by it. And, you know, just to even think that there's any reason why you should ever have an opinion other than sensitivity makes zero sense at all. And I guarantee you there are plenty of opportunities for the sales team at J.J. Taylor to offer up their opinion. Don't do it. I mean, just don't do it.
Yeah. Well, and whether it's COVID or politics or any of these other things, I find that one of the things, particularly this year, as this all has come together, is the need now more than ever is for a little bit of humility and willingness to not know the answer. And forget opinion, because we don't know. The things we thought we knew about this in February are not what we know about it now. What we knew about it in February, the realities have changed, right? I mean, every week we learn something new or we discover something new or simply things are moving in new directions. And I think one of the things, and this is tough for salespeople who are, by nature, their job is an expertise, right? The nature of my job is I'm supposed to have the answer to everything. Sometimes I think the hardest part of that can be being willing to say, I don't know, or I don't know right now, or this is what I know today, but that may change tomorrow. And this is probably more than ever a time to remember that just because you have an opinion today, don't be locked into that opinion permanently. Be willing to see how things evolve and change, and be willing to throw some skepticism and doubt at these situations, because to your point, your view of the world is, oh, you know, nobody I know has really had this. It hasn't been a big deal. It's not whatever. Somebody else's view of the world is, I had three of my kids get sick and one of them got really sick. Those are two different perspectives, both perfectly valid. It's always best to approach those relationships with a healthy dose of skepticism and open-mindedness. But I think that applies to the sales process in general. And I think that's what makes your sales process a little different than most. So why don't we train a good opportunity to transition into that and tell us just at the briefest bit, a little bit about the profit system and why you brought it to the market and why it differentiates from sort of the traditional approach to selling and the ideas that we've had about that.
No, I appreciate that. First of all, the profits process is not really too dissimilar from Gold Pitch. You look at that, and even with the booster shots, as you call them, you know, we were able to map out the ladder between the two. It was actually quite easy. But you know, one of the things that I, 21 years ago when we started, we had an opinion, we had a premise that relationship selling really was driving most people's efforts because companies weren't providing a process or B, any training around skills. Even if you don't have a process, if you teach people to listen or you teach people to pitch or you teach people to handle objections or close, those skills could really benefit you. But for reasons that are kind of explainable, that our industry, and you know, for whatever it's worth, for those who don't know any of my background, I'm a career beer person. I mean, listen, funny story. My parents, I grew up in Detroit. My dad worked at the Stroh Brewery. And when he retired, my dad got a place at Saddlebrook and would hang out with, and I assume this is a company J.J. Taylor bought, but do you remember the Sutton family at all? Does that name ring a bell? I'm sure for a lot of folks here, they were the Coors and Schlitz and all the brands that J.J. Taylor has. My dad and Mr. Sutton were buddies. And so just having grown up in the industry, in an industry that I love, I mean, it's a chock full of wonderful people and hardworking people and successful people. But again, for reasons that are hard to explain, and I shouldn't say hard, when you have an industry where for generations you could manage inventory and you could make a lot of money, which doesn't really exist anymore. You can't survive by just simply dealing with replenishment. But brands were growing back then. The category was not as mature at that time. And so 21 years ago, we're looking around saying, I think the industry could really benefit from a more value-based, a more needs-based approach. And we think it could help transform a lot of companies because right now they're relying, and it's not even something that a lot of good companies were even, I don't think it's conscious, because I don't think any company, Jeff, is their leaders are going to wake up in the morning going, isn't it great to be in an industry and work for a company that we provide no process, we provide no training, we just put our people out there, we'll delegate everything to them. No one thinks like that.
But it's below the surface of awareness.
Yeah, but when you think about it, then you go, geez, maybe we're putting our folks in a tough spot. You don't want to delegate the sales process. You don't want to, you know, we all have to sell through our own personality and through our own characters. We don't want robots, but we should all be listening. You know, I always kid my son, Sean, who's 30 years old, joined our firm a year and a half ago. And I always kid that if he was selling, he probably would use the word dude 4 or 5 times in his pitch. He's a millennial. He's a great kid. But if I sold Jeff, I'm not going to mention that word. I don't say that word. And we're going to both be successful. So 1999, it just dawned on me that I think the industry, somewhat subconsciously, the status quo was relationship selling. And boy, wouldn't it be a better industry if we could provide a process, provide some development, and bring people from relationship selling. And I guess I should stop for a second and state the obvious. I'm not suggesting that we don't want a good relationship. You know, you saw the movie Jerry Maguire, did you not? Okay. Remember Renee Zellweger says, "You had me at hello." If we're trying to get a big Miller Lite display and we walk in and the account goes, "You can have it. You had me at hello." I'm not going to apologize. You know, I mean, I'm going to take the productivity. But I should be prepared. If you have a great relationship, what does that really look like? And even the whole, like, how would you ever accuse someone of being a trusted advisor, beer advisor? What would that have to look like? You know, it has to look like value. It has to look like, I understand what your goals and needs are. I understand the impact of my suggestion, how much revenue, how much profit is going to be generated. And it goes back to that, you know, that just the idea that someone's confident that they can help. I didn't see a lot of that 21 years ago, Jeff. And sadly, I don't know how much of it I still see. I think it's still a huge opportunity. That's when we run into companies like J.J. Taylor that were very impressed because someone at the company made a decision, and I assume it was a while ago, that that was not going to be the culture within this sales team. So that's impressive. So the profits process is it's a fundamental process. It's an acronym. I'm not going to go through it, but the reality is those steps are meant to help the customer. Like if you look at the gold pitch, those steps are meant to help the customer. I would say that the one step Jeff, within profits that I'm particularly proud of is the O step in the word profits. And that's the ongoing confirmation of customer needs. You know, we think that most companies culturally aren't in tune with their customers' needs. Doesn't mean they don't have a good relationship personally. They probably do. But it'd be hard for me to accuse anyone to have a good relationship professionally if they didn't know the needs of their customer. I think it's an epidemic. So when you look at the way we've labeled that step, the ongoing confirmation. So you don't just uncover and confirm it once. You confirm it often. How often? On an ongoing basis. So the customer always knows. And I imagine there's a lot of that would go on in the streets of Minnesota and the streets of Florida where you all market. And yet I can only imagine that it's there's always room for improvement. So that step requires empathy, which is really we look at empathy as like the fuel of a good sales process. Like if profits is like an engine, empathy is the fuel for that engine. Without empathy, the engine's not really going to run all that well. So you know, the good news is that there's enough companies that culturally want to embrace a process like that and traits and approaches like empathy. But largely, companies like J.J. Taylor kind of stand out because there aren't many that really have that vision. It really comes down to that.
We're happy to have more of them in markets we don't serve yet. But I'm okay if the competition misses the ball on it. Honestly, Tom, I won't lie. But
you're probably in a good position then.
But I think you're exactly right. And I think what's great about your system and what's great about the approach is it puts to words and to formalization something that previously has always sort of been defined like pornography. We know it when we see it. We know a good rep when we see him. And we've said that around here for years. For years, that was the internal metric was, well, we know a trusted beer advisor. When we walk in the door, you see it. You feel it in the account. You feel it in the way they talk about it. You see it in the way we're represented. It's a lot of these things. But I think what's challenging, of course, is from a learning and development perspective where you and I sit, anything that we can't define, we can't make repeatable. And we want every rep to be able to hit these types of standards, but without a way to explain what we're saying is this feeling of they've got the relationship. If you can't define it, you can't repeat it. And if you can't repeat it, you can't make it institutional. You'll have a handful of those reps, but you won't have enough of them. And what I love about your system and what I love about what we've been able to work on is it does give action and tangibility to the things you have to do, the behaviors, because the outcome is the sum of those behaviors, right? It's not just do this, get that. It's you got to do all these things, but if you do them all right and you do them with consistency and you do them with excellence, the sum result is greater than their parts, and that is that trusted beer advisor, that empathic relationship that you've got that makes us win in those accounts. So it is a really great system, and it's really aligned. And we'll talk more about it when we talk about the booster shots coming up here in a bit. But
I do want to say one quick thing, though, if you don't
absolutely
mind.
Of course.
The idea of measuring it is something that we've thought a lot about, and I think that has been a challenge for a long time for really any industry. When you think about those, how do you measure those selling behaviors? And I know I'm speaking to you, who you've given your managers a tool where that app where they can scorecard the behaviors. And so to me, and it really does fall right back to the what does a trusted beer advisor really look like? Well, it looks like someone who knows the need. So if a manager is working with the sales rep, they can track how many times to start. Like, forget about it. We talked about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We talked about the Vikings. But when you get to the business part, a manager can track, did they connect with the need of the customer before they got into their solutions? So yes or no, they did or they didn't. And then when they get to their sales pitch, either they did or didn't align the benefits, which, oh, by the way, are the same words. If retailers want more sales or they want more profits, well, those benefits that our portfolio can deliver, more sales, more profits, we can track, did they deliver a pitch that focused on aligning our benefits to their needs? That's a yes or no. And even in the handling of an objection, which we know we know 90% of all sales calls are confronted with some objection. So there's a process to handle that. And the process in our view would be going back to empathy. So the idea that we would first acknowledge their objection, bring credibility to it, even if we disagree with it, it's credible. Then the second thing is because, one of the things I always ask salespeople, And it's a great question to ask salespeople, because I gave you one part of the research. 90% of all sales calls are confronted with some objection. The other sad reality is around 60% of the time, the salesperson doesn't even attempt to overcome it. They retreat. So the question then comes back to why? Why? Because what's more important, the need or the goal they have or their objection? It's not even close. Their need is more sales or more profit or more traffic or a higher basket or a higher check size. So is that more important that I don't have space or I got to be fair to the competition? I mean, their need is always going to be more important than their objection. So our process, hey, acknowledge the objection and then focus back on the most important thing. So, and again, we can measure that. If someone gets confronted with an objection, either they did do that or they didn't. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but I thought it would be worth, you know, because we're trying to make it more measurable and more objective versus a subjective evaluation at the end of the year. Hey, I've been evaluated by a boss who said, hey, Fox, you're not a very good listener. I'm like, why would you say that? They go, well, I don't know. I don't think you are. Like, versus.
Yeah. What does that mean? And how am I supposed to fix it? If you can't even quantify it, how am I supposed to improve on that? And, you know, we hire winners. We hire people who have that personality. They want to succeed. They want to get things done and they want the feedback to go along with it. And that's, again, the beauty of a system like this is when you have expected behaviors, you can measure for those behaviors and then you can coach to those behaviors. And I think that's what allows us to move the ball forward in ways that, again, a lot of others that just kind of look for the it factor can't quite get there with. We actually have a question on that, Tom. I have a question in the chat, so I'm just going to read it here for you real quick. From one of our sales managers asking, so in that same space and talking about performance measurement and getting the right folks and how important empathy is, from a selection standpoint, the question is, if I'm looking at bringing somebody up to a rep level or bringing in a new rep, what are some of the traits that I should be looking for at the selection that are going to help make sure? How do I test for that, I guess, is sort of the question in the way it's worded here in the chat. How do I make sure that I hire people that are going to be good at that sort of stuff? Do you guys have any insights on the interviewing process that you could share with us?
Well, I think, yes, I think there are some things that are absolutely coachable and trainable and other things that are not. So more from like, and I assume, Jeff, that there is a maybe a resource that you would use on occasion to profile a candidate to see, you know, in the profile aspects or attributes I would be looking for that I don't know that you can teach. And it's a word you used a minute ago was the word winner. You know, if I can hire someone who is competitive, who wants to win, and maybe also has empathy that wants to connect with the customer and not just have the JJ Taylor portfolio win, but is really all about our suppliers winning, our retailers winning. From a profile perspective, if we can hire people who have that personality trait, they are winners and they're competitive and they're aggressive. I don't know how much of that you can teach, but I know you can teach people how to listen. I know you. So it'd be one thing, hey, you better hire people who are good listeners. Yeah, that'd be great. But if they're not, we can teach that. And even empathy, which I know for some people, empathy is natural. And I don't think it's very many, but there are some people who are not, I don't think it's nearly enough. But even if you're not, and I can just say from my own example, I was absolutely not a naturally empathetic person. I felt like I could develop really good personal relationships with my customers over the years. And even though I was able to do that and connect with them and maybe have some level of success, I can tell you right now, I never really understood them at a professional level to the degree I should have. And I can only imagine that would have bolstered my career and progress even more. But I think the big challenge with that is, and I think it all comes down to exposure. I don't know many people, Jeff, that would wake up in the morning and saying, you know, I elect not to be empathic. I don't think many people. And the challenge is, you know, why wasn't I more empathetic? Well, where do you get exposed to it? I mean, did I miss the high school class on empathy or the college class? I don't remember that class being offered. You know, should you expect to get it at home? I don't know about your home, but I grew up with, I had six siblings. And we were all fighting for attention. And I grew up with incredibly unconditionally loving parents, but neither one of them had an ounce of empathy. They were wonderful parents, but you know, they were surviving. And so where do you learn it? I mean, But when you do get exposed to it, I think people, if they can buy into it, and again, I don't think many people would, upon getting educated against empathy, make a decision to go, I don't buy into this. I don't. Psychopaths, maybe, but not reasonable people.
It's a small percentage. Statistically very small group. Try to avoid hiring them. But other than that, I think you're right. I think you do have to look for that. What is the difference between what can I coach versus what can I train? And when it comes to things like listening skills or some of those, definitely coachable or you know, really more trainable. But you got to hire somebody that has that natural drive and that natural ability. And I think alongside of that too, curiosity is another one that I always put in there. I think you want to find somebody in this kind of role. They have to have a natural curiosity, whether it's just as superficial as about, I want to know more about the people I work with. I want to ask them questions and get to know them on a social level, down to the, I want to understand how their business works. I want to understand how they, you know, tick and what makes their profit margin work. And so naturally curious people I find have an edge in sales because they're more inclined to ask the questions that have to be asked to get to the selling solution.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I would have to agree. I don't know how coachable making someone more curious. That seems to be something that's either inside you or it's not. So, you know, I would have always said, you know, just haphazardly always have said, hire someone with experience because that you're buying someone's, you know, those battles that they've gone through. And there are a lot of reasons why hiring someone with experience makes sense. But what I have found in 20 years of training people is it is oftentimes a lot easier to train someone than retrain someone. I value experience, but I also wouldn't run from someone who had the traits that we were speaking about, the curiosity, the aggressiveness, the winning attitude. Because I think the rest of it, we can teach people. And even, you know, some people, you got to have knowledge for beer. I don't doubt that that's better than not having passion for beer, but I think we could have very successful salespeople who aren't necessarily worried about how much IBUs are in a, you know, pale ale versus an IPA,
Well, and to that exact point, because really, you know, how much does a customer really care? Some of them do. Some of the ones who own the craftiest of bars and are really into that, they got into it for that reason, they care probably a lot. But the guy who got a restaurant because he wanted to run a restaurant, how much does he really care about that versus tell me how I'm going to make money on this? Tell me who my demographics are. Tell me who this targets. Tell me who this is going to bring in the door. Tell me who this is going to keep at my table for two extra rounds. We oftentimes think that beer sells itself because it's beer. And that's true to the consumer. But again, going back to what we talked about earlier, our customer is ultimately the retailer. And what a retailer cares about and what a consumer cares about are two different things. I think our guys sometimes do have to know both, because in order to explain one, they have to understand it. But too many reps, I think, sometimes will get hung up on the, I'm going to be a real product knowledge expert, and forget that step of, I need to be a real entrepreneur level expert and explain, how does this make money? Because IBUs and flavor profiles, that's great. But once you've answered those questions, then the next bigger question to that bar manager is, how does this affect my bottom line?
Right. Well, no, it's a good point. And I think it does come down to the idea that you would have a want to understand what drives that person. And if the craft-centric bar and that manager is driven by image, you know, you are familiar. We'll get to the booster shots, I'm sure, shortly. But one of the acronyms that we really believe strongly in is an acronym we call SPRITE. And it's the language of retail. And if you want to understand how to connect with someone, that craft-centric person among SPRITE, it won't be sales or profit or rings. It would be image. They want to be the craftiest, coolest. You know, I mean, in the on-premise, craft has brought such a nuance that we never saw before. Because in craft, basically, you know, that craft-centric beer manager who cares about having things that no one else carries, if you went in there and said, hey, listen, you got to bring this in. Everyone carries it. It's going to sell like crazy. That's exactly what they don't want. You know, you have to pitch them and go, I have something that no one carries that won't sell at all. Bring it in. And that makes no sense at all. And yet, if that's the image they want, it's legit. And we have to sell against that. And that does come down to empathy. And I think one of the things about what makes a great salesperson would be this curiosity of going, okay, If you think about Sprite, sales, profit, rings, image, traffic, excitement, which one drives each customer? And it might be more than one. It probably will be more than one, but they're never going to all be created equal.
Absolutely. All right, good. Thank you for that, and I appreciate it. I think that that hits the nail on the head for, again, just it is such an important trait, but I think that is one of those things you gotta get that selection right up front. So great question. Thank you for asking. all right, so let's talk about the holiday selling season. You know, one of the things I put in when I announced this one is that, you know, one of my favorite Hank Haney sayings for my golf fans is, success is when opportunity meets preparation, right? And I think, you know, this is the opportunity is upon us. So how do we make sure going into the holiday selling season, we know it's a big season. Families are getting together. They want to drink to celebrate. They want to drink to survive it. They want to drink because it's that time of year. There are events. There are dinners. It is a celebratory season, even in this world. And that is what people drink with is when they want to celebrate things. The opportunity is upon us. How do we make sure that we are prepared to capitalize fully on that opportunity? What are the things that make the holiday season tick, and what should our guys be focusing on over the next few weeks as they get into that Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's trifecta?
Yeah, great question. And like we already talked about the fact that the seasonality of the holiday does over-index. There is a lot more purchasing, a lot more demand, and even beverages in particular. I just read a stat this morning that during the holidays this year, given what's going on with COVID and the holidays, and it's going to likely be something where the gathering may not be as big as it normally was, that shoppers plan on spending even 33% more on beverage alcohol for home consumption because they want to treat themselves even more. So the demand will absolutely be there. And, you know, one of the fundamentals in this, I hope it doesn't blow anyone away, but I don't know how often this question is asked, but I would want every person in the J.J. Taylor sales army to say this one question upon walking in. And the question is a simple one. What are you trying to get accomplished for the holidays? I mean, let's get highly customer focused right out of the gate, make it all about them, understand what is it about them. It's likely going to be they want to have whatever sales performance or profit performance, but get them talking. And you know, when you think about that particular question, it goes without saying that every month of the year with whatever holiday or theme that's going on the calendar, there will always be an opportunity to always reconnect with that business need based on the latest. Some accounts, I think in most cases, holidays are critically important. So you're gonna get some kind of a compelling answer. And if it's a chain store, you know that their boss or their boss's boss has drilled something in their head about what they're trying to get accomplished, and you're likely gonna get an answer. It might not be a Sprite word, but you could translate that to a Sprite word really, really easily. Again, sales, profit, rings, image, traffic, or excitement, or a combination thereof. And I think another thing too, just because if we understand what that business need is, and if it's sales or profit, I think the time is more important than ever, especially, you know, and if COVID, if, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but the numbers seem to be increasing, the demand is going to be out of control. So we'll have a probably very eager, you know, audience, especially in large format, you know, in mass, in those, you know, there's going to be a ton of interest for them to take advantage of this sky high demand. We might as well try to forecast the revenue and profit impact of our suggestion. I don't know how often that level of prep, and I don't think it would be that great, but if we're trying to get a 200 case display, we're trying to get a 50 case, whatever, or whatever, new item, whatever we're trying to do, it would not take long. And I guarantee you the professionals that work for J.J. Taylor, they probably have an idea in their head of just what is this order going to look like, and when it sells through, what's that going to mean to the customer? I honestly don't think your competition is probably speaking in that language, which would separate your teams even further from the competition and bringing you even closer to, as you are probably always interested in approaching, that trusted beer advisor and that whole first choice thing. So it does go down to fundamentals, but I would love if everyone thought the first thing, hey, the holidays are coming up, what are you trying to get accomplished? I really, and again, I'm hoping as people listen can reflect and say, am I asking that question? If I am, good, keep asking. If you're not, I can't even imagine the dialogue they would have on how that would make for a much richer sales call. Richer meaning the quality content.
Tom, do you find, because again, you work with a lot of retailers, or I'm sorry, a lot of distributors who are just taking this on. I know you guys have researched with retailers a lot, interviewed them a lot. How rare a question is something like that? I mean, how many reps, I don't know if there's a number specifically or if you can just sort of talk about it empirically, how many reps lead with what can I do for you versus lead with here's what I need you to do for me?
Okay, so I'll tell you a quick story to answer that question. I was in Southern California, and I think people are people, but I was talking to what is the event manager at a Hard Rock Cafe. So this gal dealt with events. Again, this was pre-COVID, but she dealt with vendors who were looking to get involved with their events, and they had events weekly. So as we're talking, I asked her, I said, how often is the first question from the vendor, either a distributor or a supplier who wants to partner with Hard Rock? I said, how often is the first question, what are you trying to get accomplished with this event? And she said, I've been doing this 11 years and it's never been asked once.
Wow.
I mean, I was blown away, and it just gives us more energy around the realities of our process and even the whole gold pitch, you know, process. It is there waiting for people to execute, to stand out. Jeff, there are industries where that question probably wouldn't stand out. And I don't know necessarily why it would stand out in our industry, but it would stand out. It would stand out. So I think the answer is pretty low. Fortunately or unfortunately, we look at it as job security, but it's also a great way. You want to be a trusted advisor, you should know the answer to that question.
Absolutely. So what makes the holiday, and you know, you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, because my background is training and development. I've only now just been in beer, although it's been here a lot longer than I realized just the other day. But anyway, it's going quick. But I guess one of my questions would be is, compared to other busy seasons, you know, spring break's a busy season, summer's a busy season. Why is the holidays a little different from some of those seasons? There feels like there's a different energy around this, but I've never been able to put a reason to why. Maybe you could help me and some of maybe our newer reps or people understand, what is it that makes this season so different from other busy times, and why is it so critical to retailers?
Well, and it's a great question, and it's not only critical to retailers, but it's also extremely critical to our competition. If you think about wine and spirits as our competition, you may or may not know this, but in the wine and spirits business, there is it's not even an acronym, but they say OND. You probably know what that means, right? OND is where, for many wine and spirits, it's close to half of their business, October, November, December, OND, OND. So when you are selling in the beverage alcohol space, recognize that our competition, if they don't win OND, they don't win. So we have to be, on our game to a even higher level. And unfortunately, if we aren't out in front of it, and I would imagine now a lot of your retail efforts are probably already secure. And in many cases, we can still try to influence some of those decisions, but recognize if we didn't get started into this in October, a lot of that real estate that we're trying to secure with our customers is already taken. So that's number one. I think it's also just a situation where a lot of suppliers have terrific marketing and point of sale and different pieces that can get the consumer excited. In most instances, even with COVID, it's a joyful time. So, I mean, we're dealing with people who are, you know, for the most part, probably excited. I mean, I told my wife this morning, I said, I can't believe it's a week from Thanksgiving. And I would say because of COVID, I'm probably like this. It's the least on my radar in my life this year. I'm excited about it, but it's not as heightened just because of all the things that are going on. So the fact that we can be part of that joy, I think is a real blessing that we have that opportunity. Not to mention, again, I think this year with the demand that's going to be there for our products, I think that's the answer. And I think the key is to recognize that the competition is going to be more stringent than ever and more aggressive than ever.
That is a great point. And you're exactly right. And by the way, I couldn't agree with you more that, you know, when it comes to competition, I see wine and spirits at the top of that list. They are, but also it's, you know, it's the competition of the entire market. You know, brand preference takes you so far, but really, if we're going to grow our category, we've got to grow it inside of other alcohol beverages. So, I think that's a key point to keep in mind, is that it's not just the other beer distributors, it is wine and spirits, and this is their game. This is where they stand out, and this is what they've been prepping for the hardest. So that's a great point.
Yeah, and I think you look at your wine and spirit competitors, these people have darn near national footprints. So they're immense organizations that are pretty organized. And they have learning and development pretty high on their radar. I'm not suggesting that some of your local Anheuser-Busch competition here or in Minnesota aren't really good distributors. I'm sure they are, but there's a very, really high likelihood that they're not nearly as process driven and, you know, and really focused on a more, you know, again, I know the service that Anheuser-Busch distributors provide in a lot of markets is outstanding. But you know, they're likely not. Again, we have a right to have an opinion. We've been training the industry for 21 years. You know, we would look at the Blue Silver Network as a much more, I think for years they felt like it didn't come as easy to the Blue Silver Network. And it came easy to the AB network. And now that AB brands are not trending as well, they're now like kind of like a little befuddled because they have to really start getting better at selling. And where do you start?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think necessity drove a lot of Blue Silver houses to get good at the things that the red houses are now having to learn how to get good at. And yeah, it's a strong lesson for don't get too comfortable, right? Tortoise and the hare.
Can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine that when August Bush III took over Anheuser-Busch in the mid-70s, they were a 25 share, and his goal was to get to a 50 share, and he did it. He got there, but he was so insulated and didn't look at all what was going around and all these other great brands, whether import brands, much of them went to the Blue Silver Network. And now, I mean, I would imagine probably in the mid-90s, a typical AB distributor may have had half the business in a market and probably 65 or 70% of the revenue. So the case is 50. And now that has completely flip-flopped. It's really no one could have forecasted that. No one. It's incredible.
It's been a dramatic shift, no doubt about it. All right. So the last thing I wanted to make sure we spend a little time talking about is the Sales Booster Shot program. So, you know, coming into the end of the year, I think everything right now for a lot of our guys is focused on get across the finish line. But as the year transitions and we head into January, it's going to be that time to sort of step back, especially up north. That's a very slow season for us in Minnesota. Everybody sort of, you know, hibernates for the winter. And so we've got a lot more time on our hands there. Florida, that does tend to pick up into our busy time. But, you know, the first of the year is a time to evaluate our plans, look forward, go ahead, you know, New Year's resolutions and the like. And a lot of the time that resolution includes, hey, how am I going to step up training and development for the next year? I always encourage that one. And the Sales Booster Shots are potentially a big part of that. So let's talk a little bit about that program and how we put it together. And I think the big question that I want to make sure we touch on is, what is the best way for managers to be able to leverage this tool? Because it is a fantastically well put together tool, and it works whether they can meet in person, it works whether they're meeting over Teams, it works in any environment. So talk a little bit about the process and what you guys were out there with and what we decided to collaborate on. Let's explain this better for some of our newer managers who weren't here when we rolled this out. What seems like a lifetime ago, it's so funny to me. I thought the other day, I was like, we rolled that out in January, Tom.
Right.
If only we knew. We rolled that out to such fanfare in January. We thought, hey, we got this new thing for this new year. And it's gonna. If only we knew. We had no idea what was coming 6 weeks down the road. But 2021, I think, will be a big reset on a lot of stuff, this included. So let's talk about the process.
Sure. So the vision of putting the booster shots, and let me say that this booster shot or any shot you might be anxious, this is a good thing, a really good thing. So having just had a physical yesterday and having had to draw blood, that hit a little home there, Jeff, when you said shots. But these are good things.
This is not at all painful. Right. It's got a very high effective rate. We have double-blind studied it. It's great to go.
For relationship selling is what it is.
It is. It absolutely is. Absolutely.
So what we know, you know, if we're trying to get our teams to be better at selling, You know, how does that happen? Well, there are a lot of forums that are potentially there for a manager to help their rep get better at selling. You know, they're obviously work with when we're working with the team and doing some on the job coaching, highly effective way to develop someone's skills, isolating on certain things, formal training classes, you know, really. And again, how often can we do that? Not all that often, but you can do it. You know, so we looked and we said, what other medium exists? Like, what other opportunity could exist? And we knew that for the most part, people are meeting with their teams probably once a week, no less than a couple times a month. And there's a lot going on in those meetings. So we were certainly sensitive that those meetings can't turn into just full onboard training meetings. There's a lot of performance updates. There's a lot of, you know, looking at new items, looking at all the things that are that we're tasked with doing, a lot of goal achievement updates and introductions and all that. So we have to work around that. But we said, is it reasonable to try to carve out 15 to 20 to 25 minutes a month to talk about some selling topic? So if you think about the booster shots, there are 12 of them, and that's not an accident. There, you know, there's one for every month. So the best way to go about it would be to if you have a team full of veterans and there's an area that you think that the team could have a real benefit to refreshing, they can pick and choose. You could look and say, hey, we got to get better at developing selling stories, making the trade math come alive. Pick that one, or we're going to work on listening skills, or work on closing. The table of contents or the roster of booster shots is a pretty comprehensive, you know, from all the different elements of the sales call. For a newer manager, what I would do was I would start at the beginning. And again, if you look at what we have built and the fact that you can knock it out in 20 minutes. And the 20 minutes is, you know, one of the things that's important to point out, and you and I talked about this a lot, the 20 minutes is not a lecture. The 20 minutes is 100% about engaging the salesperson to practice, to think, to brainstorm, to role play. Within each booster shot, you're talking about a 5 to 7 page PowerPoint. We would really encourage the manager to look at the speaker notes. All Jim Kalaika and I did when we built this was simply to make sure that the manager would be given ways to get the team to engage. You know, Jeff, I'm sure you've seen a lot of sales meetings and well-intended managers. Without thinking about it, it can be a 20-minute lecture or a half-hour lecture. Gosh, maybe a 45-minute lecture. And we know that people don't learn by lectures. We know that. We've got to get them involved. Is it fun the first time? Yeah, I mean, you know, is it fun to do a role play where things are pretty awkward and, you know, we're not talking with the same poise and confidence?
Well, it's at least fun for the observers.
It's fun for the observers, right. So, and again, it's only awkward. I look at this, whenever someone practices anything in terms of selling, you practice something 5 times, the awkwardness goes away significantly. And really, I think the manager's obligation is to help the salesperson figure out, how do I customize this around my personality? Because no one is mature in sales process, in my opinion, until it sounds like a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if it's not a conversation, then we're thinking about it too much, and it's going to be awkward. It's going to be not as poised as what they normally would be. So just one thing I want to mention. There's research out there it's called the forgetful curve. The reason why a one time a month approach makes a lot of sense, have the discipline, carve out the 20 minutes. Because if we talk about something today, November 19th, and we don't address it for another 6 or 8 weeks, unfortunately, 90% will be forgotten. So we can't let that. And so that 30-day forgetful curve, we can never let that clock ever expire. And so, again, is 20 minutes a month reasonable? I think it's reasonable. And I love the fact that a lot of your folks have taken advantage of it. It's a wonderful resource that you've provided them with.
Well, and the managers who have used it extensively have said everything you're saying. It's easy. It fits right into what they're already doing. They've already got these meetings. And, you know, like you said, they meet at least a couple times a month. And oftentimes they're looking, you know, there's one of those is always easy to fill a meeting with. The other time a month, we have to have them. We have standards internally that our, you know, our division presidents have said, we want you meeting with your people at least 2 to 3 to 4 times a month. If you're looking for a way to fill that content time, if you're not sure, what am I going to talk about if I have to talk 3 weeks in a row? Well, this is one of those great ways to do that. But it is so key to, as you pointed out, the forgetting curve, the Ebbinghaus curve. Every 30 days, people just fall off that cliff of what they remember. And this is a way to make sure that at least every 30 days, they're getting something. And what I love about what you guys did with the system is if you want to start January 1 and run through December and do one a month at every meeting, it flows. There is a natural progression and a build the way it's set up in the system. But it is flexible enough that if you find that right now the biggest issue is all around dealing with objections, pull that one back out and go there. Or if in 6 months that needs to be retouched on, swap it back out and do that again. They work in sequence. They work out of sequence. They can be flexible in that way. They're short. They're interactive. We've got great videos in them that you guys produced. And what I couldn't say enough about is the speaker notes that you guys put in. It's made so simple for a manager who isn't sure what to say or doesn't know what this is trying to get across. If you take the time to read through those first, you guys have done a brilliant job of, it's not scripted. It's not going to tell you what to say, but it's going to tell you how to say it and make sure everything important comes across and give you all the insights to how to make it run. So it's a really, really strong program. And I'm really glad we were able to put it together.
No, and I appreciate that. We tried to take, you know, what would be the reason why someone wouldn't provide training? Well, the prep to put some content together would be really difficult to do. And how do I really do it in a way to engage people? We've taken both those off the table, to your point. And so we were thrilled that we were able to partner on that. And I'm delighted that it's yielding some good results. That's great.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to seeing how much we continue to ramp that up into next year. Because again, you know, this year really knocked everybody off in terms of having meetings and figuring that out. But now we've got a process where we're doing all of our meetings over Teams. So we've got virtual meetings running on the regular. And again, this is easy. We've put this into Teams for our managers. It's in fact its own sub channel in Teams so they can go there. We've set up discussion boards. We're allowing them to collaborate and share ideas. So when they come up with, you know, hey, I tried it this way and it really worked, or I did this with a role play and here's what was really fun about that. But also, of course, access all the material and have it right be there. And then you guys are helping us by making sure it stays fresh and interesting and all that good stuff as well. So, sales booster shots. It's a really cool thing that we offer, and you guys were instrumental to making it happen. We weren't going to get there on our own anytime soon. You guys came in and really saved my bacon on that one. So thank you.
Thank you. Again, delighted that we could partner together on that.
Any final thoughts? Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up? I know we're getting to the end of the hour.
Well, the only thing I want to say is if I ever have to do a podcast, Jeff, you would be my first choice to be the moderator. I thought you, you can tell you're a professional, and it was a pleasure to be part. And I just as a legacy, what a legacy that would be, not only as a salesperson, but if you follow the guidance the company provided, the idea of being the first choice and the way to do it is to be that trusted beer advisor. You're not only going to have a lot more success in your current role, but those that can execute that approach are the ones that are going to be noticed. Again, success make more money, but have a lot of opportunity for progressive responsibility opportunities for promotions, because those who can master those processes can master other processes, and it gets noticed. And, you know, what a wonderful platform and runway you've provided the team. So I'm impressed, very impressed.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it, because you guys are doing really, truly fabulous work. I think you're, as I've said to you before, I think what you guys are doing with the Fox Selling System is by far what the industry should be moving towards. And we're blessed here to have a team big enough to be able to do some of it ourselves. But I think for sure there's a lot of distributors out there that need it. And the fact that you guys have made it available to so many more is good, because it's raising the bar across the whole industry. And that's what we want to see. So, Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time today and sitting down with us and being able to talk through this stuff. It's always good, like we say, to get these little booster shots to talk about the stuff that we don't get to talk about enough and remind ourselves of why this matters and build that energy around it, because this is the season. This is the time of year we want our guys charging in there. And this kind of stuff, I think, helps keep them excited and keep them anxious and gets a chance for them to hear it from someone other than me, because, you know, they hear from me all the time. But when they can hear from guys like you that really know what they're talking about, it just makes it that much better. So I really appreciate you giving us the time today and making it possible.
My pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much. All right, guys. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. This has been our Brew University virtual roundtable for November with our guest, Tom Fox. Tom, again, thank you very much for being here. And thank you all for joining us on this as well. We will look forward to seeing you again at the next one. Have a good afternoon, everybody.